Welcome to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. Get ready to embrace the fearless mindset and revolutionize your dentistry practice. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And this morning, I'm really pleased to have as my guest, Genevieve Poppy. I was at a conference in late September, and Genevieve was going to speak there, but she was unable to. She came down with, was it COVID?
It was, yeah.
What a bummer.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was.
Not fun. I was really looking forward to your presentation, Genevieve. There was 2 days of really great information handed out, but I had earmarked on the schedule to pay particular attention and have my pen ready for note-taking when you were going to give your presentation. The thing that caught my attention with this was the new patient whisperer and the front desk phone skills. And for me in my practice, patient communication with the patient and effective communication with each other was critically important for the growth of my practice and also the maintenance of the practice. So, Genevieve, you have a long history of being in dentistry. I'm going to let you share with the audience your bio, and then we'll start getting into the meat.
Sure. Well, I've been in dentistry since I was a naughty kid in high school. My guidance counselor got me a job with her dentist, and the rest is history. I've done everything from dental assisting to practice management to actually owning and managing 7 practices in Wisconsin. And now I work with dental practices all over on building their empires, building their practice. And then there's this funny thing that you would think wouldn't take up so much of my time, but I actually spend a lot of time with practices on new patient conversion and phone skills, because I've found it's really a huge blind spot in almost every practice that I work with. They feel stuck. They feel like they can't grow. They blame their marketing companies. And really, it's their team's inability to convert a lead on the phone that's limiting their new patient growth.
In my practice, Genevieve, I put the front desk skills as probably the number one most critical system in my practice. I went through the Pankey Institute, loved it, gained great skills in practice, patient diagnosis, treatment, and how to work that system. Went through the Dawson Institute, went through a number of other clinical courses and continuums. So I came away and I had good clinical skills as I perceived it at that time. But the one thing that I knew that was missing was my ability to communicate with the patient and sell the case. But, you know, all of the information that I gathered at the Pankey Institute and the Dawson Institute was of absolutely no value to me until I had a new patient sitting in front of me. Talk about the conversion and how you came about that.
Yeah, well, my own aha moment with new patient phone skills actually came back from when I had my own practices. I thought that I had done pretty good training on patient communication, but I had 2 practices that were about 1.5 miles apart from each other. And one was seeing about 40 new patients a month, and the other was seeing about 12 new patients a month. I mean, they had the same marketing campaigns, the same basic demographics of people. And I just happened, luckily, to be answering the phone one day, actually for a couple days in a row, in the practice that was having way less new patients. I had both of my front desk people out and just had to go cover it, right? And it was a beautiful blessing, really, because one, in the first day that I was there, I scheduled 8 new patients, which taught me that the phone was ringing. Yes. It was ringing a lot.
Yeah.
But I had one particular call that was this huge aha for me. And basically what happened is I had a young kid call with a very specific question. I could tell he was young, probably in his 20s. And he said, hey, do you guys require an FMX for people over 23? Which is a very weird question. And I said, well, in my head, I thought, oh no, my my office manager here would have absolutely said, yes, we require a full series of x-rays on our comprehensive knee. She would have upheld the x-ray policy in this first question instead of getting curious. But I guess with the blessing of owning the place, I was able to say, well, you know, we like to have one, but tell me why you ask. And he said, well, I've been seeing Dr. So-and-so down the street forever, his whole life. And he's like, and once you're 23, it's their policy that you have to have an FMX. And I said, well, is there a reason that you don't want to have one? And he said, well, I just had a panoramic x-ray. The words he's saying tell me that a person has educated him about an x-ray policy.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And I said, well, are you having problems? And he said, no. I said, how about this? Let's just get you in. I'll transfer whatever current x-rays you have. If you need an FMX, if the doctor wants one, I'll take it. It's on the house, you know. And he's like, really? I said, yeah, absolutely. So I schedule him. He's super excited, really happy. And then as I'm making his appointment, he said, oh, by the way, do you guys do Invisalign? And I said, we sure do. And he said, well, good, because my mom just told me she paid for Invisalign. So this doctor down the street lost a literal lifelong patient over $100 FMX by a well-meaning team member who upheld his policy. And yeah. I scored a $6,000 new patient call. Just by being curious, just by not being so rigid with these rote answers that we get to people. Yes. And so all that to say is I think dentists don't even teach their teams to receive those types of questions as a potential new patient. They just hear, that's a question, I'm going to answer it. They don't even perceive that as a loss when they say, no, we don't, or that, yes, we do. They just pick up the phone with the intent to answer questions. Teaching them to get curious and empowering them to make little moves like comping an FMX, if that's the holdup, is actually really powerful in new patient growth.
I'm convinced by visiting with other dentists that, and I know you are, Genevieve, mm-hmm. with your practice experience, that there is really insufficient training of the front desk people with their communication mm-hmm. skills. A lot of times we hire the people, we hire them because maybe they're fun during the interview, and we hire people for the wrong reasons. And so they come on board and we just kind of put them out there at the front mm-hmm. and say, answer the phone, you're going to do fine. And there's no real yes. real training. And mm-hmm. when you're trying to niche your practice up and you're trying to create in your practice the ultimate patient experience, you have to have phenomenal communication skills by the point of entry people.
Absolutely.
For your patients into the practice.
Yes.
Talk more about that.
Oh, especially if we're talking about a niched practice, a high-end yeah. restorative practice. I see this propensity to want to get the most experienced people doing things like insurance and financials and AR, and then put the least experienced person on answering the phone. They'll say to me, like, I'm so busy, if somebody would just answer this phone. And they'll hire. I've been in offices where there's team members looking for the business card of the doctor because they don't even know the address for the patient. I mean, that's how little they know about the practice, and they're answering your phone. And it's mind-boggling. And I think we position the phone as like the thing that's busy and interrupts us. And really, the phone is the thing that fills our schedule and keeps our practice alive. I would propose if you're in a high-end practice, one of your most experienced people should be answering the phone. The person who understands your dentistry, the person who can connect what you have to offer to what this person needs, should be the one answering the phone. And yet we position the phone as this thing that interrupts us getting the stuff done. And it's really fundamentally wrong. The other side of what's really happening in really every dental practice that I'm seeing is we're teaching an entire generation of front desk people that their job is to be good at insurance. We hire people because they're good at insurance and they know Dentrix or they know Eaglesoft. And really, that is in case acceptance and in new patient conversion, those are not the skills that grow your practice. You Correct. Can teach anybody to do an insurance breakdown. It's in fact the first thing I would outsource if you're too busy to answer your phone, if you're too busy to give time. When people are like, I don't have time to have a 5-minute conversation, I'm like, then you should get rid of something. Like, you can't not have time to talk to patients and say and tell your marketing company in the next breath that they're not sending you the right kind of patients. Like it's just a huge disconnect. And even then, when I see dentists, I always joke with my dental clients, you almost always will pick the wrong person in an interview. Because we tend to attract these high S, high C personalities, which seem like what we want. They're detail-oriented and steady. But really what you kind of want at your front desk are extroverts, like high D and high I personalities, high I's if you can find them, though they're rare in dentistry, because you need influencers, you need people connectors, and you need people that doesn't drain their energy, right? Like they're actually happy to pick up the phone. I love talking on the phone, right? It genuinely wakes me up and gets me going in the morning, and other people that like actually drains all the life out of them. So, you know, when people are saying, oh, well, she doesn't have any dental experience, but she worked at a bank, so she's really professional, right? Like I hear that all the time. They're looking for this level of professionalism and polish. And I'm like, okay, well, if I was looking for somebody that had no dental experience, and they'll cringe when I say this, I look for somebody who's cut hair or was a bartender. I look for somebody who can talk to people all day.
Yes.
And like, it's just backwards from how we hire and fill those positions all across our industry.
Yeah. I hear that in visiting with people that they want. Well, just the other day I was visiting with someone and said, we just want an insurance person. We'll put them at the front desk and they'll be overflow for the calls. And it's kind of like, no, that's not right.
No,
that isn't correct.
They should be able to take that off the insurance off of the plate of people who are great on the phone or who are great with your patients.
Yes.
But not to be very often once those new people come in, the existing team members feel like, oh, thank goodness. Now I don't have to answer the phone all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want.
Let's see. There's an office of what they have three people at the front desk. They have one that sits at the main greeting area, mm-hmm. one that is an insurance individual, and then one that is kind of the new patient welcoming concierge. Talk to me about that scenario. How would you set that up? If you walked into this office, Genevieve, mm-hmm. what would you look at? How would you arrange those three? And knowing that the insurance individual is a youngster, communication skills effective are probably three, four. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Right.
And, it's just social media is one of their main things in life and whatever. And then you've got two a little more experienced people, the new patient concierge, you know, a little got her act together. Mm-hmm. And then you have the one that is the actual initial receptionist. Talk to me about that scenario. How would you look at that and work that?
You know, this is always so different from office to office and the people who are sitting in those seats, right? You know, this is a very hard thing to say, but generally speaking, I look for my person who's largely going to be presenting the new patient treatment or having that first new patient treatment consult with them to try to take new patient phone calls. Because then they have sort of that continuation of connection, if that's possible. And there's ways to set that up. Like, so if you have a phone system that pops up, which patient is calling, like if you can identify that this might be a new patient, you can say those are the priority for this person to take, or even having a handoff system. And if I have offices where like I have a couple people who are just not capable of converting these calls, I have a system where they basically don't say no to anything and hand it off, right? Like don't kill it and give it to the person who can do this.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. There are some offices now that wish they had sort of that perfect flow, but they're living in still in an insurance environment. Their schedule is very busy. They're still seeing a high volume of patients. And then it's really just a sort of whoever can grab the phone scenario. Even then, it's why it's so important that everybody has training to at least not really screw it up, to at least identify that you might be over your head in this call and that there's somebody more experienced that should be having this conversation. So yeah. Like that's the first threshold is like there's going to be a scenario where everybody's going to have to be able to pick up the phone and at least not mess it up. Right. Yeah. So in small teams, yeah. I actually teach the whole team. So in case you have assistants or hygienists that occasionally pick up the phone, I make sure they understand at least the first step of our phone process so that they don't kill a lead. They don't, you know, kill a big fish.
Yeah.
Because the number of times I've heard clinical team members in well-intentioned pick up a phone and just completely, they're going into educate mode and then they just actually kill the case.
Yeah.
They're doing what they know how to do, but they don't understand the sensitivity of that part of the conversation or what to do with it.
Yeah. I have some words written down here that I took note of as you were talking a few minutes ago. Listening skills.
Mm-hmm.
Curiosity.
Hmm.
imagination, mm-hmm. and influencer.
Mm-hmm.
If someone incorporates those three things into their skill set in answering the phone, they will go a long ways with the patient, won't they?
Truly. Honestly, if I could teach people or find people with those things innately, and then they're empowered and allowed to do those things, they really don't hardly need verbal skills. You know, I teach a lot of times what people want from me is like exactly what I say. And I tell people all the time, it's way more important to teach people how to think or how to react to this than it is to teach them exactly what to say. And I think, you know, whereas especially, and this is the unfortunate side effect of practices that go through these Pinky Dawson Spear type trainings, is as we niche up, there becomes this big focus on distinguishing ourselves as professional and better.
Yes.
And the unintended consequence of that is that it can become alienating and sometimes almost pretentious.
Yes.
And a lot of times, and I'm not trying to say that critically, it's just what I see happen, because they're proud of this thing they've put all this work into. And the easy thing to say about patients that we don't convert is they're not our ideal patient. You know, that's the big out. And we're hoping for like unicorn patients that call us and say, you're the expert and please let me come to you. But that isn't how those calls sound, right? The highest need patients often are high fear patients. They're patients who aren't going to come in a suit and in a Lexus. You know, they're people who are just normal people with a lot of needs. And so I think we miss the opportunity to really apply those skills and really help the people we wish we were helping in the name of being experts. It's why, right. Like, some of these offices will cringe when I present a person that's less than perfectly polished as a candidate, right? Because they want this certain look or this certain feel. And I will say, this person is a connector, right? You can give her a haircut or you can buy her a uniform. Like, it's very specific in terms of even a look in some offices that they're trying to present. And I think, unfortunately, that attempt to be so professional, especially on the first impression, really loses people. What people are looking for before they know how good you are is if they like you, if they trust you.
Correct.
And that all happens when they get to talk and you get to listen. And we don't know how to formulate that on the phone very well as an industry.
So true. The thing that I enjoyed with my practice, Genevieve, is when I really started incorporating and I realized the need to ask great questions and listen, because I became really curious about every new patient.
Yep.
I looked at them different when I did that. I just thought, you know, I look at these people and I go, they called my office for a specific reason, my office versus anybody else's. Maybe
right.
We were third or fourth on the list, but I wanted my team to understand that they went out of their way to dial our number. So they mm-hmm. want to come see us. So my curiosity was, why? Why come mm-hmm. see us?
Right.
Even if it was a patient that had minimal needs, but you'd never know. You can unwrap and you can discover by asking great questions and listening to their answers and then following up, and let your continual curiosity drive the conversation, imagination.
Right.
And you, like you shared with the young person about it ending up being an Invisalign case, you mm-hmm. never know what you're going to unwrap.
Right.
And I've got here, let's see, vulnerability is the birthplace of innovation, creativity, change, and growth. And, you know, you're speaking to this a minute ago, and I know that for a fact, you know, the Pinky doctors, the Dawson doctors, there is just a little bit different feel about them.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, like you indicated, arrogance or whatever, but a little pretentious nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they found themselves, we found ourselves to be less vulnerable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that is a turnoff for people.
Right.
And people that come to see us, Genevieve, they're scared, they're intimidated, they have a lot of baggage at times.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And all we need to do is just realize that they didn't leave all of that in the parking lot when they walked in. It came in with them. So mm-hmm. stay with the person, value them, value their word, value what they have to offer, and learn from it. And when you
yes.
do that, you get to co-diagnose.
All, taking all of that stuff that you have and just applying it a smidge differently on the front end, I think is so effective. I mean, I just to be clear, my own dentist is a Panky dentist. I fly to Oklahoma to see him. You know, like I value that dentistry. And what's funny is like everybody I meet from those organizations cares so much about their dentistry. They care so much about what they're doing. Where the tiny disconnect is on the front end is just that they lead with this expert foot instead of leading with a connection first. Yes. And you would get to do so much more of that important dentistry if you could just connect instead of seeking to educate and impress as the first step. Yeah. You know, people just don't. And believing that people have to somehow immediately respect your expertise, they don't, honestly. A lot of these people don't have a ton of dental experience, period. They don't have a way to distinguish it. They don't know if you're really good or not. And they don't need to. You have to know you're good, right?
Correct.
Like they don't have to end this whole thing praising you. Yeah. Like they could end the whole thing just restored and happy and feeling good about themselves. And it was still all your skill that landed them there. And so it's this one little thing that I feel like I have to tweak a little bit with teams that have gone all the way through that training and have come to just believe that like when it doesn't work out with the patient, it's the patient's fault. That's what we do.
Oh yeah.
Over and over. It's that patient. Oh, yes. It's our marketing companies, these Google patients. We classify patients. We judge patients on the front end. And I just don't find that helpful if the goal is to actually convert more of them to treatment.
100% agree with it. Just when we start classifying people, we have really judged them. And we've judged them on very little information and evidence.
Yes.
And so we don't give them a chance.
Yep. We do it in one question on the phone. Do you take my insurance? Insurance-driven patient. How much is this? Cost shopper. We do it in one single question. And then you have one front desk person who classifies that person and puts a filter on them for your whole team to view them through. Right? It's so damaging to me to name a person and what they are in one question is often what happens on the phone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the one thing I did with my front desk people is I would ask them this question: share with me one valid reason as to why your abilities at the front desk answering the patient, new patient phone call, that you could not completely sell a case within 5 to 10 minutes with that patient. None of them could ever provide me with an answer on that, other than the fact that they lacked the appropriate verbal communication skills. Mm-hmm. But there was no, and if they did provide an obstacle, Genevieve, we would talk through it and work through it.
Right.
What do we need to do to get you to the point where you feel confident in really establishing and gaining a great connection and developing a relationship with them to where they liked you and trusted you? And since they trusted you, they somehow or another segued that into trusting me automatically because this person at the front desk has their act together.
Yeah.
And they're an example of my philosophy and my perceived expertise. So again, share with me why that can't happen.
Well, it can't happen if we hire the wrong people to do it. There are people who can't do this. I think that that's, you know, I wouldn't want to say can't do it effectively, not to, you know, it's a performance position is, you know, you don't get to keep being the wide receiver if you drop the ball. You know, there are people that are more skilled at it than others. And it's important for us to just say that part of it. But then the other thing is there's a ton of people who the training that they get is so there's a lot of focus on scripts. We need a script for this. We need a script for this. We need a script for this. And what you'll see is that teams just won't do it. It feels so unnatural to them. They feel so inauthentic when they're doing it that they just resist it. So I know offices where they're like, we've given them all the training. We have scripts for this. And the problem is nobody's doing it because it doesn't feel natural to them. They feel like they're being deceptive. They feel like they're being manipulative. And so they just resist it entirely. And so to me, when I teach people, I really teach sort of a framework or an order of a conversation and like tactics to keep it going in that order. But not so much. And I give them verbiage examples, like here's how I say that. Here's how I get to that part of it, because it's helpful when you don't have it, you know, to have a way to start it, but then make it your own over time. But the word that, you know, you keep using is curiosity. And I think we also have front desk teams operating under high stress, high pressure. They're doing a thousand different things. And they don't even believe that this is the priority. They hurry. They're in a rush. You hear them. If you listen, I've listened to thousands and thousands of recorded phone calls. One, if you're not recording your new patient phone calls, you should be. And two, if you are, you'll die when you listen to them. Even smart, really good people, I hear answering the phone in ways that most doctors would die if they heard it. Like it's that bad.
Yes.
It's so off their radar. I just heard a call the other day. I hear this all the time. Like if you're in office, and this is very common in these types of offices that restores implants but doesn't place implants, I promise you, you have one member of your team that will get a new patient call once a week that says, do you do implants? And then your team member will educate them about how you don't technically place the implant surgically, and they have to go to an oral surgeon for that part, but you place implant crowns and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, the answer should be, absolutely, we can help you get an implant. Tell me about this implant you need. Right.
Like,
that's what we want them to do. But they're going into, here's what I know, and let me educate you. And I don't want to lie to them and all of these weird things that go through their head. It happens every day in practices like this. You're marketing for implants. You get calls that say, do you do implants? And you have team members that basically tell your team, no, we don't really do them.
Correct.
And they're not technically wrong, but did they just, and I'll say to people when I hear these calls, who does this patient need to see first? Do they need to see the oral surgeon first, or do they need to see us first? Well, they need to see us first. So from now on, the answer is, we can absolutely help you with that. Tell me about this implant you need.
Yes.
Like, that's what we need to do, right? And it seems so simple, and yet everything that's they're wired to do, and some offices even have forms that people have to fill out that are a series of yes, no questions of information gathering. So natural conversations are not encouraged to, and they're actually discouraged from happening. You know, like I'll give the example of like the emergency patient, right? A lot of offices will have like an emergency form, and it'll be like, where's the tooth? Upper, lower, left, right, third from the back, fourth from the back. Is it sharp? Is it cold? Is it hot? It's yes, 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 yes. And I'm like, okay, if a person called and says they have a broken tooth, what should you say? And they're like, oh, I should say, oh, that's too bad. I'm so sorry. What you'll hear almost every person say is, okay, which means I'm thinking about where I'm going to put this.
Yes.
And then they go into where is the, and they go into yes, no questions. And I'm like, wouldn't that have felt so different if you just said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Like, you would get all of that same information. And then it'll come down to, well, the doctor or the assistant will be really mad if I don't have all of this information. And so then this is where you have to tie this back to the whole team. And I'm like, I've been in offices where I've seen assistants come up to the front desk and scream that they don't know if this is upper or lower tooth. Right. And my point is, like, I, as the assistant, would rather walk back and see the patient and say, a little birdie told me you broke this on a grilled cheese sandwich. It's one of 32 teeth. It's going to take us 5 seconds to figure out which tooth this is. Like, they're in their own head. Like, they're like, well, I like to have the x-ray set up. I'm like, you can flip the RIN. It takes 2 seconds. Like, you can do it while you're talking. We're just starting with all the wrong stuff. Everybody's so worried and insecure about looking or sounding stupid or not having information. Like, that's what it will always come down to. And they kind of forget that you can just talk to people. It's not crazy to walk into a room and say, now, where is this tooth? That doesn't make anybody look stupid.
Yeah.
Right. I actually think what makes you look stupid is if you got all of that information at the front desk on your little form, and then you go in and ask them all the same questions again.
You bet.
That's like going to the doctor's office when you say it on the phone, and then the MA comes in, then the nurse comes in, and then the doctor comes in, and you've answered the same question 17 times. Like, that's what we don't want to have. Like, we need to actually just like hit the brakes and teach people to talk to each other again.
Yep.
Might be a dream, but I feel like that's really the solution. Just like actually have a conversation, not a checkbox of information that everybody feels they need to look smart when the person arrives.
That's right. You know, I wrote down a couple more words here. I loved the natural conversation, because that's what it needs to be. And that's where people are comfortable. That's where they let down and they submit themselves to the concept of vulnerability with you.
Yes.
So the natural conversation, and again, the curiosity, and let your imagination and curiosity lead the way, but have the courage to step forward and engage with the patient where the patient's at, bring them along in the process, and don't get after any other team member when you can do a lot of this with your patient yourself and build that relationship.
Right. When it comes to the phone, like, we should be celebrating that they got the person in.
Yes.
Right? Like, absolutely. That's what we should, that's the win. Not like, I watched this happen. It's why if you're doing phone training, you actually have to include your whole team in understanding that you're shifting some things up and that there's less focus on perfect information and more focus on connection. And what you should be looking for is, tell me about this human, not exactly what's going on with this tooth. Have you diagnosed the whole thing over the phone? Right? Like, that's not what we want to teach people to do. And so it's important, not that everybody need to be a phone expert in your office, but they should understand the process that your front's been trained on, so that there's not unintentional things that happen like that, that put people right back into, I better have all of my T's crossed and my I's dotted, or I'm going to hear it from the assistant or hygienist.
Correct.
Or sometimes the doctor, you know, like that happens, and we get them focused on all the wrong things.
Yeah.
It sounds like it should be so easy. The phrase that I try to teach my teams, and I love the word courage, because that's a really important part in terms of, like, building up some bravery to overcome objections. Beyond curiosity, you know, which is so important, I like to use the phrase, tell me. Tell me is how I teach teams to build an open-ended conversation. Tell me about this implant you need. Tell me what we need to get you in here for. Right? It doesn't have to be, do you want to get established as a comprehensive patient? You know, like, that's one, that's a yes, no question. And two, it doesn't lead to actually any real connection. Don't make the patient tell you things perfectly. Let them just talk, right?
Yeah.
So tell me is my click to curiosity. But then when I do eventually get that pushback, I'll circle back around and be like, okay, John, I know you wanted to know about this. Let me just give you an idea about that. Or let me tell you how we do that. Mm-hmm. Then I say, how does that sound? Right. And when I say, how does that sound, there again, that allows me to, like, flush their objection without making them say it perfectly. A lot of times we'll say things like, do you have any questions? And patients don't have questions. They have a feeling. They have a feeling like, oh, I was hoping that I could find a place that took my insurance, or, oh, that sounds like it might be a lot, you know? So when you say, how does that sound? They'll say, oh, that sounds like a lot more money than I thought. Or, oh, I was really hoping to go somewhere in network. This is where I watch so many calls die, where people are like, we don't want to push, we don't want to sell. You've built the rapport, you've done this much work. You know, if you know this person, anything about this person, you have one shot to kind of push back at it, right? And so when I get that, I don't want people to go hard sell. But if you try once, you'd be surprised. People, like you said, called you for a reason. Their intention is to end this call with an appointment. So they want you to fix this for them, right? Like, that's what they want you to do. You know, and people think I'm crazy when I tell them. I'll say things like, oh my gosh, John, I can't let you go there. Right? Like, you told me this, this, and this, and I really need you to see Dr. Gordon. Like, he's the person for this job. They're like, you would say that to a person? I'm like, well, yeah, I would. I would really mean it, you know? And you can do that when you've built rapport. You can't do that if you've had an information exchange conversation.
Correct.
Yep. You know, and people say, oh, you're right. You're right. You know, like, I'm called the new patient whisperer. I joke about this, but, like, I can get a person calling the wrong office or a wrong phone number and schedule them a dental appointment.
Yeah.
So
they think they're calling a pizza shop and they call you and you schedule them for a new, and not only
I've scheduled, like, solicitors. I scheduled the person trying to sell me radio advertising a dental appointment. So, I mean, like,
funny. Yeah.
I don't feel like it's selling. I just feel like I wouldn't answer the phone somewhere that I didn't really believe people should come.
Yeah. You know, Genevieve, it's an interesting point, and this thought came up as you were visiting, sharing with me just a minute ago. People want to sell or tell their story.
Yes.
They really love to talk about themselves and their story, but they will only do that to someone that they feel is interested in them and wants to hear the story.
Yes.
And once you hear their story and you acknowledge it, I'm going to say this game is over. I'm going to say that in a respectful way.
Yeah.
Because you've broken down the walls.
Absolutely.
And then at that point, you get to do some dentistry on that patient because they say in their mind, I can trust you. Mm-hmm. I like you. You paid attention to me. Let's do whatever we need to do.
I mean, it's sad, but the number of scenarios or interactions where people are actually listened to by a stranger in this world are almost none. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't actually go find that very often at all, where somebody asks you a question and really means it.
Yes.
When I teach people this tell me concept, you know, I then tell them, like, this is crucial to this part. I don't even want you to say tell me if you're not listening. Right? Like, don't ask people to talk to you about themselves and then demonstrate to them 5 seconds later you weren't listening.
Correct.
That's like the kiss of death. Like, that's where people leave upset and or hang up the phone upset or even leave bad reviews. There's really nothing worse than getting going doing that and then realizing a person wasn't listening to you at all.
Yeah.
I see this all the time with dental team members who pride themselves in their multitasking, right? Like, they'll in an interview, they'll tell you how good they are at multitasking. But what that also means is I'm really good at not listening to anybody. I'm thinking ahead. I'm listening to respond. I'm already looking through the schedule as to where I'm going to put them. I'm thinking about this person walking up front with me, right? Like, it's really important that if you are saying, tell me about this implant, and you're engaging somebody's story, you better keep your head down with a pen in your hand and listen to them.
Yeah.
You really have to. And you have to show them later in that call that you listen to them. Things like, I know you said this, right? Just tying back anything they said is so important to making a person feel really heard. And there's really, when it comes to ultimate case acceptance and conversion, there's really nothing more effective than making a person feel heard.
You bet.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I advocate is to slow down, to speed up. Slow down and have these relevant conversations, ask great questions, make the patient feel relevant and accepted and heard. And then you get to do more comprehensive dentistry, which is the speeding up, but you're not really speeding up. You get to see 2 patients a day, maybe, and you're doing a lot of comprehensive dentistry. And so you're increasing your productivity. You're increasing your profitability by slowing down, listening to patients and making them feel important.
And to that point, a lot of times, just to kind of draw some of the disconnects, right, between sometimes the doctor saying that, but then what they also will expect from their front desk team, is it's important, one, that you have conversations about these types of things and that you're monitoring your success with new patient calls. A lot of times when I get into training with teams on this, what I find is that there are things the doctor is asking for or demanding or that the team perceives as the priority. And I will say, I promise you, if this doctor knew you were on the phone with a potentially $60,000 case, he would not find you being on hold with Blue Cross Blue Shield as the more important thing. I promise you, he would not find you, you know, posting this insurance check today the most important thing. I promise you, like, that would not be the priority if they understood, but they don't talk about it and doctors don't realize that, like, their random requests for things build ideas in team minds, like that's the thing you want. That's the thing that you think is important. And so it's important to clarify that, like, really nothing will ever be more important. There isn't anything that can't wait until tomorrow except for the patient on the phone and the patient in front of us. Like, that has to be made clear. And I think a lot of doctors think that's obvious. And yet they'll also be the same doctor who will stand at the front desk like this waiting for the deposit to be done at 5:01. They don't understand the mixed messages that they're sending. Because I've seen offices that will, like, literally let a call go to voicemail because the doctor's mad if the deposit isn't done when he wants to leave at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well.
I think we know what that practice is like, don't we, Genevieve?
We do, though. I've seen it in a lot of what would be considered very high-end offices, because a lot of those doctors are like high-D driver type personalities. They don't understand that, you know, they've spent 15 years since they spent a day behind their own front desk. You know, they just don't understand what's happening fully. And so for them, it's like, we have systems. This is done by this time. Here's our checklist. You know, that those are the things they'll say. And nobody's brave enough to be like, doctor, you want this done and posted at the expense of me not answering a new patient phone call that's coming in at 4:45?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, is that how important it is? Or, like, I also think team members aren't flexible. Like, I would be like, okay, if my doctor really wants it, I'm just going to post these 3 checks tomorrow. But it's a disconnect in the personality types and what each side thinks is perfect.
Correct.
And I think it's just, if you're in growth mode and new patients are important in your practice, that you have conversations about what the barriers are as a team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I firmly believe, Genevieve, that you've got your priorities correct in this, that, and in my practice, the number one thing was focusing on the new patient. Because mm-hmm. without the new patient, we don't need staff. We don't need our articulators. We don't mm-hmm. need anything.
Right.
So focusing on the new patient phone call and relationship with that individual is where it's at. Share with us, as we start to wrap up here a little bit, two mm-hmm. things.
Sure.
I want you to talk about the new patient phone call program okay. that you have, and then also any follow-up consulting that you do with practices.
Sure. Yeah. I actually work with dental teams on the phone call side of it. Typically, I have like a 6-month program that involves not just virtual training, but I actually listen to game tape or recorded phone call with team members one-on-one and give them specific feedback and specific strategies about next time. And that to me is the real disconnect in a lot of training in terms of taking it from training to actual implementation, because a lot of people can listen to this, like the idea of it, but then when they pick up the phone, they cannot break their own verbal and mental habits in terms of how to direct a call.
Yeah.
They'll watch it. They'll even say to me like, we pretty much do that. We're pretty much doing that. And then I play their phone call and they're not pretty much doing it. They're not doing it at all. And it's not because
Correct.
They're lying to me. It's because they really don't see the difference between
right.
what I'm saying and what they're saying.
Yes.
And so I do it in a really positive way. I don't do the group shaming. I do it very privately with people in a way that mm-hmm. allows them mm-hmm. to build confidence instead of feeling shut down.
You bet.
And I don't do secret shopper calls. I don't do that fake stuff. I take real calls where we really either succeeded or we really failed at it and build strategies for how we could do that different next time.
Yeah.
So I work with people in that way. And then beyond that, I actually work with dental teams really in more full practice management training and coaching, I guess I should say. So when practices are a little bit stuck or they've kind of hit a ceiling in their practice or they feel like they're on a hamster wheel, if you will, when they feel like they just, whatever they're doing now isn't taking them to the next level.
Yeah.
I can kind of come in as a fresh set of eyes and say, okay, I can see it. Here's what we can do. If your goal is to grow the practice, this is what we can do. Or if your goal is to have less stress, you know, here's what we need to fix in communication. Because my background is so broad, there's probably not a practice scenario that I haven't seen. I don't have a cookie cutter binder of here's the 7 things I do. I think there's everybody's goal and what they want in their practice is very different.
Yes.
I work with small boutique private practices. I work with big, you know, growing multi-doctor, multi-location practices, and all parts of dentistry like that are exciting to me. And I just like helping the dentists take what they, when they built this building, when they bought this practice, what they had in their head, let's get it there.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's not a cookie cutter deal, because it's just like a new patient. Everybody is different and the prescription and the need is different. And I know for a fact that a lot of the consulting agencies out there, because I've talked with multiples before and mm-hmm. at an arm's length participated with one, where you are this same scenario, the
yeah.
exact same scenario, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And it's like each consulting management group mm-hmm. shared the format with each other.
Yes.
and that's frustrating.
It's all about systems. Yeah.
All about systems.
And I think systems are great, except that if you don't have like the basis of communication and you don't have an environment of accountability, the number of offices I come into that have great content sitting in a binder of systems that nobody's doing.
Correct.
Is the problem, right? So it's not like I don't think systems matter, but I don't think systems matter if you don't enforce any of them, or if
yeah.
only some people have to do them. Then they don't matter. Then
yeah.
you're just saying they don't matter at all.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways it hurts me, because a lot of doctors, just given their personalities, love the idea that there's a binder in 12 steps, and I'm a little bit more. They'll say, well, what is your program exactly? I'm like, well, I've got to come there and see it. Then
yeah.
I'll tell you. So I'm not everybody's cup of tea in that regard, but I do help a lot of different doctors really change and grow their practices, but all with sort of different paths to getting that done.
Yeah, great. Well, this is good information, Genevieve, and I know that there are some practices out there that need you. Definitely. The communication skills and the ability to relate with individuals, develop relationships, and connect is so vital to the growth of the practice and maintenance of the practice. Mm-hmm. And what I consider is the most important part of dentistry, or as I looked at it with my practice, was going to a transformational component versus transactional. And I think what you're offering here definitely allows the staff and the doctor to go into that transformational, which I think is far more fulfilling for you.
That's the thing people don't realize about implementing like a new phone call, right? Like changing the way you talk on the phone.
Yes.
That it's actually, I tell people all the time, once this doesn't feel weird to you, you will like it so much more.
Yes.
You know, rapport is a two-way street. You can't build it with this person. You can't build connection with this person and not feel it and receive it yourself. Right. So it's really worth the push because like you said, then you felt happier. It wasn't just because of the dentistry you were doing.
Correct.
It wasn't just because you unlocked, now I get to do these cases. It's because
you
unlocked the benefit of connection for you as well.
Absolutely. And you know, if they can have pride in who they are and what they become, and knowing that they still have a ways to go and get greater and greater and greater. You're right on track, Genevieve. I love it. I hope our listeners, you get some calls and connections from this. I really hope that that's the case. If they haven't, they need to do that. So I will provide them ways, Genevieve, at the end of the episode notes to make connection with you. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we draw to a conclusion?
You better not keep me going. I think we could talk about this all day, but
we could.
You know, absolutely. We could. I love talking to another person who makes me feel grounded. Like I sometimes feel like I'm crazy. This is the most important thing, but it really is.
Without a doubt. And every day that someone puts off calling you, Genevieve, they are a new patient, a new friend, and productive and profit.
I don't think they realize how many new patients they're losing. That would be my parting advice. If you don't have a way to measure that or look at that, there are some good systems out there. You know, message me. I'll just give you a few examples, but you need to know what's happening on your phone.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, having the doctors participate and listen to some of these will awaken them.
Yeah.
Definitely. I appreciate you being on with us today and sharing your message, as you know. And I appreciate, you know, what you have shared with them. So I look forward myself to working with you in the future. And that is today's episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. We appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.